I'm Darren Levy, and this is Citywide, airing every Tuesday evening from 7:30 to 8 p.m. right here on WNYU 89.1 FM New York and WNYU.org New York University Radio. Citywide features insight from some of New York's most innovative artists. Today we will be talking with James Felder. He's a professional TV writer and teaches the course Writing the TV Sitcom here at NYU. He's going to tell us some secrets to breaking into the TV writing business. And now, here to talk with us is James. Thank you very much for joining us here on Citywide, James.
Well, thank you for having me.
No problem. So, what made you want to become a TV writer?
First and foremost, I wanted to be a writer, storyteller, and I sort of bumped into it. You know, I think if you give a lot of people the choice of their writers, what they want to do, even though a lot of people gravitate towards novels and stuff just conceptually, everybody sort of grows up with movies and TV. And so if the road opens up, I think a lot of people jump to it. And what had happened was, to keep the story short, I dropped out of school temporarily a while ago, 10 years ago or so, more at this point, maybe 15, to get a job at Marvel Comics. And a very strange thing happened, because when I went freelance writing there for comics, on a total weird fluke, I had something optioned for an animated series, which never got made, which is sort of standard for the course. But at that point, I got this sort of idea in my head, TV writing. And that's sort of, you know, and that's sort of where I ended up.
Great. So what do you enjoy most about TV writing?
The thing I think most TV writers, I hope, one of the things I sort of like, and I think most of them do, I hope, is working with known characters, so that even though one of the demands of the medium is that these are characters and worlds where only certain things can happen, there's a certain security to that. It's tough because you have to keep true to that world, these walls, but I actually sort of like those walls to bounce off of. And so that's just a sort of comforting thing for me. So when I was working in comics, it was the same thing. And TV sort of a similar thing that way.
That's very interesting, because I had a playwright person on, and she was talking about how she likes writing one-woman shows because she gets to do all these different characters and she gets to create anything she wants. And she said she could never write for a show like Everybody Loves Raymond because it's just the same characters week after week after week. But that's something that you enjoy.
Yeah, and, you know, it's sort of... it's a mindset. It's not better or worse, but it's a mindset. So, like, are you familiar with this comic strip Crazy Cat from the 1900s? Mm-hmm. Crazy Cat was one of the highest achievements of comic strip art, and every week the strip was about the same thing, which was Crazy Cat's in love with a mouse who likes to hit him in the head with a brick. Every single comic strip was the same story concept. And yet every one was totally different. And so... if there's a stale or a bad sitcom, or you see a bad episode, that is the issue, in the sense that it is very hackneyed and confining. But this is sort of like jazz, like playing music within the notes, you know, between the notes. And mm-hmm. So there's marvelous things you can do specifically because the audience knows the characters. And so you can play to that, and you can play against it.
So what would you say are the most difficult parts of the job?
Anything the interesting thing about how TV works is many people are involved in the process from start to finish, and everybody is trying to make that story as good as possible, sincerely as good as possible, and yet everybody sort of has varying amounts of taste, good or bad. And so I think any writer would tell you this about any process, but the most frustrating part is when the process isn't working in your favor, in the sense that whatever you feel is important as a writer is not getting through. And that's sort of part of the medium, you know?
So does that bother you when you work hard on a script and then a producer wants to change it?
you know, there's, yes, but part of it is that you always have stories you do on your own. You have personal work that you're doing outside of TV. I think most TV writers would tell you that. But also... you know, when I was a very young, fiery person at Marvel, and we were all sort of bleeding for the place, we would have these vehement arguments about should Thor do this, or can Hulk punch somebody in the face and they'll survive. But, you know, at the end of the day, we didn't own the characters. The company owns the characters. And so at the end of the day, with TV, it boils down to the producers own those properties. And you must walk in the door knowing that. And they, you know, depending on the level of TV you're working on, they pay you well enough that you should be satisfied. And if you don't like it, take the money and do your own stuff, you know?
That's true, especially now with the internet. You can do basically, you can go off on your own and do whatever you want.
Oh, my goodness, yes. And even, this is even starting to work its way, I mean, especially with YouTube and all this, but it's working its way into the way TV is programmed in general. And, you know, stuff like HBO is the first indicator of that. But as, there's like, there's a show, Everybody, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, is that the name of the show?
Yeah.
And, you know, that was really... That really got off the ground because those guys sat down and did something themselves on video. And so very much there's even niches in TV that are opening up like that. So it's it is the way of the world. It's getting that way very quickly.
So would you be able to share some of the shows you've written for?
The only shows I've written for are animated shows, actually. I've never written for a sitcom, per se. I've worked on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And I'm working on a show on Fox Saturday Morning now, which is whatever, you know, it's what it is. They don't credit the writers so on this show. So the fact that what they think of us, they don't credit us, should probably tell you what I think of the show. But it's an okay gig for what it is.
Yeah, I mean, I remember watching an episode that you did.
Yeah.
And thinking, you know, there's just so much, you know, I remember... watching Saturday morning cartoons, and there was Pee Wee's Playhouse, and there was Garfield, and there just wasn't so much to all the characters, but it just seemed like, with what you did, it seemed like there was more to each character. They each had their own special thing they could do, and, I mean, when you're writing a show like that, how do you know so much about the characters to stay true to the hardcore fans?
Well, the show's new, which is lucky, so there's not that much old continuity, but, especially, like, when I did the Turtles episode, where... There's producers have been working on the show for 10 years, but also the one of the fellas who co-created the Turtles in the first place, actually one of the guys who is in the process on the script. And if you do something that's out of character, well, let me put to you, first let me say, part of the TV craft is we sit down before we do a script and really study the show to try to understand not only how the characters work, but also how the world works, how stories, you know, just like the simplest example I can give you is, any fan of the Twilight Zone knows that these little morality plays, things play out a certain way in the Twilight Zone. It's sort of that way for any show. Every show's got its own rules once you figure it out. That aside, though, if I was writing a Turtles episode and I write something that's out of character for Donatello, I will get a very angry, vehement script note from the fella who co-created the property 30 years ago, whenever he did it. And so... like I said, the process is very intensive. A lot of eyes get on it before it ever reaches the air. So that's probably, I do a lot on my end before I put one word on the page to get that world right. But the process, it's built into the process that stuff is reviewed before any fan sees it.
But it must be very nice to know that, you know, you're going to write all this stuff and then animators are going to animate it, which probably takes... a lot of time, I'm sure. Do you think it takes more time for them to animate it than for you to write it?
Oh, no. It takes them much more time to animate it.
Yes.
And this is sort of the way of the world. It was like that in comics, too. It's very strange because, well, I don't know for an animated episode, but usually, like, if you were writing a, like, if you wrote a screenplay or if you wrote a live-action script, the people doing it, it would take them much more time to actually get that thing on the screen than the time you spend at the typewriter. But ideally, you're actually spending more time coming up with the story and wandering around with it in your head. And I know if you talk to anybody who's on a show, like, you know, if I'm doing this cartoon now, or like Charlie Rubin, who runs their department, he's currently got a gig on Law & Order, Criminal Intent. Invariably, if you ask one of us, you pass in the hallway, oh, what's up? There's some problem in our head we're trying to crack on the next script. Or we've got in notes and we're trying to crack it. So even though the time in the typewriter, we try to spend as little time in front of that typewriter as possible, there's an immense amount of time of problem solving, and, you know, if you're doing your job right.
And I'm also kind of curious about, when are you thinking about the people that are going to be doing the voices or the character work for the people that you're writing for?
Well, the cartoon I'm working on is the first season, and the producers, I think deliberately for some reason, would not let us be exposed to the voice talent and or the production process. So invariably what would happen was, it's interesting, invariably what would happen was that I would write a character as the producers had laid it out for me. They would give me corrections, correcting the voice. I'd correct it blindly, not really knowing what the deal was with it. And now that episodes are starting to air, I am adjusting how I'm scripting those characters. Because not only are they changing some when the stuff aired and I'm seeing it, but also, it's the ear thing. You listen to it, you watch the cartoon, you realize which lines are clunkers and which aren't. And you do start to feed the characters lines that are going to be better for them.
So you don't even see the show until it airs?
Oh, no. There's some cartoons where, yes, you will get to see animatics or stuff. The nature of this show, from the way they're doing it, I have almost nothing to do with it past the typewriter stage. They call me up on a Friday, we need a script Monday. and I'm not saying I criticize them at all. I'm just saying I'm known as the quick guy on the show. So I'll bang out the script. I'll sort of live with the characters for 48 hours and then forget about them for a few weeks. And so, no, I have nothing to do with the process past that. But some, it's really highly dependent on the show. And, you know, if you're, one of the things that's nice about animation is if you were working on a sitcom, like we have many people in our department are currently on sitcoms or were on sitcoms or running sitcoms, that's actually a longer process in that after you write the script, when you see one of these sitcoms that's taped before an audience, they will have the writers a lot of times off camera. And if a line doesn't work, the director will stop it and they'll actually toss it in your lap and say, we need a better line, give us a better line. Well, everybody's waiting there for it. And so that it really depends on, and one hour drama works a little similar to that too, depending on the show. A lot of times the writers will be on set for that. Animation, because it's so strung out, and it's such a production line process, it's not even feasible a lot of time to have me there. But live action, yeah, you would be on the set a lot.
Mm. It seems like very stressful if you have everybody else just waiting for you to come up with a better line.
Oh, my goodness. I'll tell you a story. We had somebody, I won't name, not because it's an embarrassing story, but I don't have a permission to use the story per se, but that we had somebody in an apartment, really, really gifted writer, legend, worked on Friends. She was telling a story about how when they would be doing a Friends episode, they would be on set, and the director would say, stop, this line isn't working, we need something better. And these writers, during the sitcoms, they'll be up around the clock. You know, the studios will be bringing in all the Twinkies and the soda and all this crap to keep them going throughout the 24 hours. They'll be gaining weight as the clock's going. And she told us that she would be there sitting off set, and they would demand a joke. And the writers had gotten into the habit sometimes that even though they didn't have a winner that on the tip of their tongue, they knew what sounded like a joke. They could actually put in a ringer where if it came out of the character's mouth and the rhythm was right, the audience would take the cue that it was a joke and laugh at it. Mm. And so frequently on the clock, they would sometimes pump some of those out.
That's interesting. So it doesn't even... Some things aren't even jokes, they're just the way that the character works.
And the rhythm. It's a rhythm, you know, it's just like a song. I mean, do you ever watch Curb Your Enthusiasm?
Well, I definitely know the show. I don't get HBO.
Curb is a hilariously funny show. It's 99% a winner, start to finish. You know, everything's mm-hmm. so good on that. But that's like a piece of jazz, that show. It's totally musical. And so even if, you know, this hideous thing that is being taken out of sitcoms finally, the laugh track, mm-hmm. even though the laugh track is totally phony and weird, it does somewhat represent the thing in that it's the call and response of the show and the audience. And that's some of the really good sitcom writers. That's the musicality of it, and that the jokes are there, and the audience sort of knows to laugh even if they're not totally connecting with the joke yet.
You're listening to Citywide on WNYU 89.1 FM New York. I'm Darren Levy, and I'm talking with James Felder, who is a professional TV writer, and you're also a professor here at NYU.
Yes.
So let's talk a little bit about that. I know you teach a class, writing the TV sitcom. What challenges your students the most when trying to write a TV sitcom?
What challenges the most is so many people grow up with sitcoms, and so many people are used to the form, the spectacle of it, that they're not used to really what the skeleton, they don't really see what the skeleton underneath it is. And so the stereotype of what a sitcom is wacky stuff is going on. Somebody comes into a room and acts wacky. And some stuff, sometimes sitcoms do degenerate into that. But the real heart, and it's a simple thing, but it's really deep. You can spend your life as a writer chewing it over, is that every scene is really about conflict. And even more specific to that, is that if you have two characters in a room and they have a conflict, the way that the character solves or doesn't solve that situation is specific to the character and defines that character. No other character could be swapped into there and have an identical conclusion to the scene. And that's a very tough thing sometimes for students to wrap their head around. Partly the cosmetics of that, in that them really understanding, I'm being serious, it's not weird philosophy. Please do not do a scene that is about somebody acting wacky. That is not the heart of any scene. But the actual deepness of an interaction between two people is specific to that situation, that time, and those characters. That's a wonderfully deep, hard thing to do. And a well-done sitcom makes it look easy. And so I deal with that. Experienced writers deal with it. Students deal with it. And that's a hard thing.
So in your class, I know that you help the students to write a spec script, which is a script that someone will write about a show that's already on the air. So what are the steps to helping your students write out that first spec script? What's the first thing you have them do?
Not to get into the minutiae of it, but basically you start with the premise. Mm-hmm. The premise is a very clean premise that explains the concept of that episode. And by that, and this is another thing, you know, students have a very hard time with initially, some of them getting over, is we I don't know if people grow up anymore with it, but it used to be you grew up with TV Guide, and they had these, what were considered the premises of the episodes, but they were really vague pieces of nothingness. They were, so-and-so, goes to a chicken factory and hijinks ensue. And it's not telling us anything about not only what the characters do, but how they interact with each other, what the conflicts are. And so that's the heart of every episode. And it's the first thing you have to communicate if you were going to verbally pitch the episode. So when they do their spec script, this is department theory, you know, this is how we try to train all our TV writers in the department. We try to take them through the same process they would go through on a show, but make them demand the same thing of themselves. And so we start with that little premise that describes all the turns in the story, all the major things that happen really up to what might be termed the climax of that episode. And then we go to an outline, and the outline has very specific things we need out of it that really, again, are conflict-based. They're not what I would call frosty, little details that don't matter about the scene. And then we take them through the script. And the goal is never, we want the students to have a finished script. And they will get a big chunk of that script done during the semester. But the goal, and some get them finished, but the goal is never, let's bang out a script in the semester. The goal is, because all these steps and the heart of it really are very deep, hard things for people to grasp as a writer sometimes. The goal is for them to understand it and to bring their level of writing, whatever the next step up is, to being TV sellable. And so for some people, honestly, for some people, it's just, okay, getting them so they can get out a script that they're right there at the edge. They just need to get the script out. And for others of them, it's honestly just getting them to think about scene construction and how rigorous you must be to do justice to these characters and tell stories that are accurate with them.
So, in your mind, what will make a good spec script?
Here's the conundrum. The good spec script, there's a couple things that go on the list which almost are contradictory at times. The first is you must be able to tell a story that reads like the show. That's a real vague catchphrase. But it must be in the voice of the show. And yet, it must be a story that has never been told in the show before. It must be an original story. Frequently, when you're doing spec scripts, if you're really on the scent, if you're really doing a good one, invariably, halfway through your script, you'll turn on the show and they'll do an episode that week that's your concept. That's happened to me. I've had that happen with students before. So you must be accurate to the show, do things they haven't done before. That being said, you must also, agents get deluged with these things, and so you must give them something that sort of jumps out of the pile. And so even though you're doing stuff within the voice of the show, I always tell the guys, the girls in my class, the students, you need something that sort of jumps out of the pile a bit. I'll give you an example of this. Agent came to speak at our in our division 2 years ago. She was telling this story. There was a spec script. Somebody who'd never done TV work before got work out in Hollywood based off it. It was a Soprano spec script. It was early on in the show. Is it AJ's the son, I think, right? I don't remember his name. Anyway, she did a script where AJ follows his father, Tony, to Tony's mistress. And after Tony leaves, he confronts the mistress. And the mistress gives him a job. Now, this was very early in the run of the show. AJ was still a relatively young character. It was a little outrageous. But the point of the story is that the agent said that every time somebody called up, an agent called up, or somebody called up to see if they'd read the script, the agent always said, oh, is that the one where AJ got the beep, beep, beep? And so this is sort of what you're doing. Also, the general rule of thumb, these things usually go through a lot of revisions, ideally. The general rule of thumb is, you want, like if you were doing an Earl, My Name is Earl episode, you would want your spec to be better than the worst show that season that they aired, which sometimes is quite a high bar to meet.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the basic rule of thumb, better than the worst show that season.
Mm. So I guess on the flip side of that coin, what would make a bad script?
We have one class where we go through the forbidden list. Okay, there's two things that end up going into that, usually, that make bad scripts. I mean, it's bad writing in general. But one is things that are wildly out of character for the show, which, like, somebody just did some pages for me of The Office, and they, just for fun, I think they're goofing off that week, they wrote the characters like they were in, like, a police academy comedy. Sex craze, doing the most foul, obscene things in the script. And so obviously you read that, you see the person doesn't know how to write the show. The other thing is, the other two things might be, we have what in the department, which we privately circulate, which is a forbidden list of things that we encourage people not to do with sitcom stories in their spec, because even though it's the things that everybody occurs to them the first time they're going to do a sitcom spec, and they don't realize that they've been done to death on TV, and that any showrunner, the head writer of a show, if they were staffing up the show, they would see that, and it would be a red flag. This person doesn't know how to tell original stories. Stuff on the forbidden list are like poker games. Last year, for some reason, we were getting a lot of scripts about talent shows being done in the workplace. There's a whole list of just really old, hoary cliches you would never want to do. And what was the third thing? We were saying there were, there's the friend list. I don't remember the third one. If it occurs throughout, to let you know. But that's enough to keep most people busy.
What are some of your favorite shows that are on right now that you would maybe even suggest somebody write a spec script for, or that you've written a spec script for?
We have some insight into what our agents get, but Office is the most popular script, I believe, at the moment. And I think 30 Rock, if 30 Rock sticks around, which I think it will be, that'll be a popular script next year. The ones that are sort of the gems that I don't think people ever touch, but they're good shows, is people, I find, tend to avoid the Earl specs because I guess it's like a, it's a man show, you know, it's like a boy humor show, so people avoid it. There's also, there's a show, Everybody Hates Chris Rock sitcom. Mm-hmm. It's actually a really solid done show. This season hasn't been the best episodes in the world, but it's a solid done show, and it's a family show. And so sometimes that's just nice to show that kind of stuff. There's certain shows that people who are into entertainment gravitate towards, like Entourage, like Curb Your Enthusiasm, which we generally discourage people from doing. Entourage and Curb for a blanket thing that most people who are not in the entertainment business don't understand how entertainment people talk. So it comes out as really canned. And if you're an agent and you live and breathe that every day, it's not the best thing. And Curb, only because Curb is probably one of the most complexly plotted, intricate, wonderful, beautiful, jazzy sitcoms in history. And I, oh my, one of the things we have people do when they do spec, when you spec a sitcom, you should do, you chart out episodes. You actually sit down with the episodes and you figure out, you know, this A story, B story, C story, in order of importance. And you graph them out to see how do they weave together the stories, how complicated it is. You will get a migraine if you graph out a Curb. I mean, it's like trying to transcribe Charlie Parker. It'll drive you insane.
So do you ever tell students who want to be sitcom writers to try out stand-up comedy? Because I feel like a lot of stand-up comics end up getting jobs as writers on TV shows.
I certainly do not discourage it. There's a couple approaches to how people staff shows. And one way they staff shows is off spec scripts. That is literally just to try to see if somebody can write a clean story with characters that are existing characters. The other is they base it off a person's body of work. They might be a playwright, you know, like, I can't remember her name, but the gal who plays Kelly on The Office had a really noted off-Broadway thing called Ben and Matt, I think it was called. It was about Ben Affleck and Matt Damon.
Yeah, I think I heard about that.
Yeah, and that's, I believe that's how she got her office job. Her job on the sitcom The Office. and so that's another route. The one caveat I do give is improv training, I don't do it, but improv training I think is invaluable, but you must be able to see that there's a place for improv and there's a place for plotting. And actually, most sitcoms are heavily, heavily plotted. I could probably, I mean, if we sat down, I could show you a couple episodes of The Office where clearly there's improv work going on. And in the Curb, there's actually a large amount, even though it's overall plotted. But you must be able to, don't let it be a will-o'-the-wisp. You know what I'm saying? Like, improv, comedy improv, I think, is very great because it sort of teaches the physics of how comedy works, jokes and so forth. But plot, story structure, that's really what we focus on in the department.
Well, it looks like we're going to have to finish up soon, but before we do, I know that, you know, it's obviously very hard to break into the business of TV writing, but what's the best piece of advice you've ever gotten when it comes to writing for TV?
The best piece of advice, I think, maybe is that when people give you criticism, accept it politely whether or not you agree with it. That's part of the job, and you'll close doors if you don't.
Great. Well, I definitely learned a whole lot from this whole discussion here, and I really appreciate you taking the time. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
That's it for Citywide. I'm Darren Levy. You can email your comments about today's show to citywide@wnyu.org. Visit Citywide on the web at wnyu.org/citywide. We'll be back next week with more arts talk, but for now, keep it here on New York University Radio, because up next is experimental acoustic music with Heather on Outside. And don't forget, folks, next week is actually going to be my last episode hosting Citywide. Be sure to tune in for that one. It's going to be a very special one. Thanks so much for tuning in, and from everyone here at WNYU News, have a great night.